This is a CBC podcast.
If you choose to stay in one of those evacuation areas, you're going to die.
It is life or death decision time as another powerful storm bears down on Florida. Right now, Hurricane Milton is churning and building over warm Gulf waters and on a path towards Tampa, a densely populated area that hasn't seen a direct hit in more than a century. And if this hurricane season wasn't complicated enough, it is happening during a presidential campaign.
It's causing confusion, it's causing chaos, and people aren't able to get the help that they need because they're seeing so much information that is not true.
Misinformation and a political storm brewing as Donald Trump attacks disaster relief efforts. Democrats say it's a lot of hot air. Welcome to Your World Tonight. I'm Susan Bonner. It is Tuesday, October 8th, coming up on 6 p.m. Eastern, also on the podcast.
Canada is among the countries that is featuring the extraordinary profits for those who are prepared to roll the dice and get involved.
The high risks and rewards of sending drugs down under. More and more illegal narcotics, including fentanyl, are being smuggled into Australia, and Canada is a top exporter. By all accounts, it is a monster. A Category 5 hurricane again. Milton is so big and so dangerous that millions of people in Florida have been told to get out of its path or risk losing their lives. But as Vanessa Lee reports, staying may be dangerous. Leaving has been difficult.
They say it's going to be biblical. So.
James Skiver and his son are among the millions of people fleeing their homes ahead of Milton, the largest evacuation Florida has seen in years.
We were going to stay, but I don't want to take the chance because of the bridges also. Once they're covered, you can't get out.
Whether it's filling up the car to leave or jerry cans to power generators, the hunt for gas is fueling anxiety. Hundreds of gas stations across the state ran dry today. Governor Ron DeSantis is urging anyone who hasn't left to hit the road before the hurricane hits.
If you're going to get out now. Time will be running out very shortly.
The U.S. National Hurricane Center says Milton is forecast to remain an extremely dangerous hurricane through landfall in Florida sometime tomorrow night or early Thursday morning. The Tampa area is expected to be hit with the full force of the storm, which is projected to cut all the way across the state to the Atlantic. The storm surge could reach up to 4.5 meters. Punishing winds of over 250 kilometers an hour are expected, along with potentially catastrophic rain. Chad Cronister is a local sheriff.
We have an area that's already heavily saturated. We're already recovering and healing from the last hurricane. There's no way for where for that water to go. It's going to be catastrophic.
U.S. President Joe Biden has canceled his trip to Germany and Angola to monitor Milton. He says the government is preparing to support affected communities.
With the potential for this storm to both enter Florida as a hurricane and leave Florida as a hurricane on the Atlantic coast, this could be the worst storm to hit Florida in over a century.
Milton is the third fastest intensifying storm on record in the Atlantic, as experts warn the climate crisis is fueling more powerful storms. Climate scientist Daniel Guilford.
In certain places like the Gulf of Mexico, temperatures are actually growing faster than around other places on the planet over the ocean. And that means that there's a lot more fuel available to these storms than there would have been if we hadn't burned greenhouse gases. There's going to be incredible damage associated with this storm on the order of billions of dollars.
Already, crews are scrambling to remove piles of debris left from Hurricane Helene, which could turn into dangerous projectiles, as an already battered state braces for its second devastating storm in just 2 weeks. Vanessa Lee, CBC News, Montreal.
As if Milton isn't enough of a danger, misinformation and disinformation about hurricane relief funding is adding to the challenges before the storm even hits. As Paul Hunter reports, politicizing disasters may not be new, but like Milton, it's been gaining strength.
Alongside all the federal aid handed down to help the countless in need after Helene, a reminder that in this election year, even monster storms come with fierce U.S. politics.
Kamala Harris has left them stranded. This is the worst response to a storm or a catastrophe or a hurricane that we've ever seen, ever.
That's former President Donald Trump on the weekend slamming the federal response to Helene. His crowd cheered, but fact-checkers had a field day, labeling much of what he said on federal aid after Helene as demonstrably false. That aid was deliberately held back from Republican voters, or that federal money went to illegal immigrants, leaving not enough for storm victims. False and false, say independent fact-checkers.
Praise is un-American.
Joe Biden today pushing back on Trump's claims as not only unwanted, ugly politicking, but harmful to those in need.
Those who do it to try to damage the administration. Well, that's, we can take care of ourselves. But it misleads people. It puts people in circumstances where they panic.
Even Republican governors in the region have underlined federal help has been coming through.
I've spoken to all the political leaders in the region. We've got an overwhelming response, a positive response from everyone from the governors of Florida up to North Carolina.
Trump backer and Republican lawmaker Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia, even falsely suggesting the U.S. government somehow controls the weather, sparking a deluge of online conspiracy theories, and this from late-night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel.
Listen, Marjorie, if they could control the weather, they would have made sure a house landed directly on you, you demented wicked witch.
It's extraordinarily irresponsible.
Vice President Kamala Harris, battling Trump for the White House in November, is also pushing back. A new Harris campaign ad features testimonials from former Trump insiders on what they saw from Trump as president when natural disasters struck.
He would suggest not giving disaster relief to states that hadn't voted for him.
All of this as the next, even bigger storm, Milton, now targets the Florida coast. Paul Hunter, CBC News, Washington.
As people on Florida's west coast brace for impact, a new report out today underscores what's becoming painfully obvious. The planet is at a critical and unpredictable new phase of the climate crisis. The study says more than two dozen of Earth's vital signs have reached record levels, leading to even more extreme weather. Ben Shingler has details.
A hardware store parking lot in Florida, full of people piling supplies into their cars as they brace for Hurricane Milton.
Getting some wood to board up the windows, you know, trying to stay safe, make sure nothing hits our house. That's the goal.
Authors of a major new report in the journal Bioscience say the Earth is seeing more and more extreme weather, like hurricanes, and paints a grim picture of what's to come. A team of scientists looked at 35 so-called vital signs for the planet. They found that 25 of them were at record levels in the wrong direction, from bleached coral reefs to rising greenhouse gas emissions. The study's stark conclusion, quote, that the Earth is on the brink of an irreversible climate disaster.
We're having these heat waves and floods and hurricanes, and they're becoming more frequent and more intense and leaving trails of devastation worldwide.
Jillian Gregg is one of the authors. The professor at Oregon State University says the report looked at what humans are doing to the planet and how the planet is responding.
The question isn't just what is going to happen in any one year. The question is, how is this changing through time?
University of Waterloo climate scientist Sarah Birch is among those who believe with quick action, there's a chance to avoid the worst of climate change. She points to a more positive vital sign in the report, the rapid increase in renewable energy.
You know, our growth in emissions is slowing. It hasn't stopped yet. It hasn't leveled off or even declined yet. But this is what happens first.
What happens next, she says, needs to be more ambitious, though the report also highlights an obstacle: ever-increasing subsidies for fossil fuels.
If we were to wipe out all subsidies altogether, renewable energies would beat the pants off of fossil fuels.
Harvard University professor Naomi Oreskes also worked on the report. She says she's devoted years to warning about the effects of climate change.
And yet, the world just barrels forward in a kind of reckless disregard for what is happening to the planet and its real impact on people across this globe.
Oreskes says that's all the more reason to act now to avoid the worst. Ben Shingler, CBC News, Montreal.
Coming up on the podcast, banned from the House, Pierre Poilievre suffers a one-day parliamentary penalty, but that hardly stifles the war of words with the Liberals. And a new twist on the illicit drug trade, Canadian illegal methamphetamine sold for big profit in Australia. Tension over the war in the Middle East is boiling over on Parliament Hill again today. Conservative leader Pierre Poilievre blasting Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly outside the House of Commons one day after his comments inside the House got him banned from speaking in the chamber for the day. Tom Perry has the latest on the war of words between the Liberals and Conservatives.
Oral questions. Questions orales. L'honorable député.
Question period today, a little quieter than usual, with opposition leader Pierre Poilievre in the political penalty box. Silenced for the day by House Speaker Greg Fergus over a heated exchange yesterday between Poilievre and Foreign Affairs Minister Melanie Joly.
Will the government clearly and unequivocally condemn these genocidal chants from hateful mobs on our streets? Yeah.
Poilievre challenged the Liberals to reject anti-Israel slogans that have been heard at protests across the country and lashed out when Joly didn't answer to his satisfaction.
She continues to pander to Hamas supporters in the Liberal Party as part of her leadership campaign rather than doing her job.
Joly fired back that it was the Conservative leader playing politics on a day of mourning.
And I really hope that my colleague in front will apologize.
Right on. Poilievre did not apologize and would not retract his comments. In fact, he doubled down today outside the Commons, arguing Joly is the one who should be saying sorry.
A foreign affairs minister in Canada should find it very easy to condemn those kinds of remarks, but she didn't because she's pandering politically.
The Conservative leader went further and urged the government to ban an international activist group that some Jewish organizations say is linked to terrorism. Samedoun helped organize a protest in Vancouver yesterday where video, not independently verified by the CBC, shows masked demonstrators setting fire to a Canadian flag.
Will the Prime Minister commit to protecting our Jewish communities and label Samedoun a terrorist organization?
We condemn them full stop. Any form of anti-Semitism is wrong.
With Poilievre gagged for the day by the Speaker, Conservative MPs like Dawn Stewart took the fight to the government inside the House. With Liberal Jennifer O'Connell, the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Public Safety, and others on the defense. O'Connell says the government has asked its security advisors for direction on what to do with Samedoun, a process, she says, that takes time. Time that allows Conservatives to keep hammering the Liberals on an issue the Liberals say should be above politics. Tom Perry, CBC News, Ottawa.
People around Lebanon's capital face another night of anxiety. The Israel Defense Forces issued new evacuation warnings in Beirut's southern suburbs as Israel expands its ground incursion into the country while dealing with a barrage of incoming Hezbollah rockets. Our senior international correspondent Margaret Evans is in Beirut.
No relief for Lebanon. Israeli airstrikes relentless, both here in the capital, Beirut. The dark smoke hovering above the Hezbollah stronghold is a constant. And in the south, where Israel says it's expanding its ground operation. And from the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu today, a warning delivered to the Lebanese people.
You have an opportunity to save Lebanon before it falls into the abyss of a long war that will lead to destruction and suffering like we see in Gaza.
He said Israel had taken out the likely replacements for the slain Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah and the replacement's replacement, he said.
I say to you, the people of Lebanon, free your country from Hezbollah so that this war can end.
Earlier, Hezbollah fired 170 rockets at Israel, some making it through Israel's Iron Dome defense system to hit near Haifa. The militant group's deputy leader, Naeem Qassem, also appeared in a dimly lit video to deny Israeli claims of battlefield success. I would like to reassure you our capabilities are fine, he said, and what the enemy said about them being affected is a delusion. But he also backed ceasefire efforts undertaken by Lebanon's interim government and without specifically linking them to a ceasefire in Gaza, as Hezbollah leaders have consistently done in the past. Lebanese fears of a wider Israeli ground invasion have grown along with Israeli military orders that civilians stay away from the coastline and off the water, from the port of Sidon all the way to the Israeli border. Lebanon's Hezbollah-backed Minister for Public Works and Transportation, Ali Hamia, says it's a big problem.
As you know, we have the port of Sidon. It's a commercial port. So we have several public services there. We have our people that they live there. But at the end, this is our sovereignty, our land.
Alarm bells over the growing humanitarian impact on Lebanon, already fragile, continue to sound. 900 schools designated as shelters for more than 1 million displaced, already overflowing. Many people in Beirut still sleeping outside with nowhere to go. In southern Lebanon, aid agencies say nearly 100 healthcare facilities, including 5 hospitals, are no longer functioning. And some UN officials say they fear Israel is employing the same methods of warfare it is in Gaza. Margaret Evans, CBC News, Beirut.
Syria's defense ministry says Israel has also fired on Damascus today. Local reports say 7 people were killed in the airstrikes, but there's no independent confirmation. State media said there's damage to civilian areas in the capital. Israel has conducted airstrikes in Syria before, saying it's targeting military capabilities backed by Iran. Canada's illicit drug trade is expanding. Canadian authorities warned today of a rise of attempted exports of toxic methamphetamine to Australia. Georgie Smythe on the lengths criminals are going to and what law enforcement agencies in both countries are trying to do to stop it.
We have a blanket that was actually soaked in the methamphetamine product.
Methamphetamine disguised as wax and scented candle jars, meth in crystal form wrapped in colourful birthday wrapping paper, among the packages Rahul Coelho from the Canada Border Services Agency says were intercepted at Vancouver's International Mail Centre, destined for Australia, all within the past 5 months.
Our country should not be seen by criminals as the place that exports dangerous drugs.
Linnell Redman is also with the CBSA. She says Australia has become a top export destination of dangerous drugs from Canada, to the agency's dismay.
We are refusing to be the driver of methamphetamine distribution, and we are dedicated to finding all narcotics that are attempting to breach our borders.
Some of these drugs are being seized in BC before leaving the country, including in June when more than 1,200 litres of liquid meth was found hidden in apple juice bottles at docks in Richmond. But some drugs are getting to Australia hidden in large cargo shipments or carried by Canadians in their suitcases. Penny Spies is with the Australian Border Force.
Sometimes drugs are already on the way before anyone's been able to take action. So they will share that data with us in real time, and then we'll see what we can do here in Australia to stop the goods at the border.
Australian police are taking notice too.
Canada is among the countries that it's featuring in terms of source destinations.
David McLean is the Assistant Commissioner for the Australian Federal Police, also known as the AFP. From their headquarters in Canberra, he says criminals in North America are targeting Australia because they can sell the drugs for a much higher price there.
It's extraordinary profits for those who are prepared to roll the dice and get involved.
And it's not just methamphetamine. In 2022, the AFP seized the largest ever shipment of fentanyl in Melbourne. 11 kilos of the potent opioid was hidden in a wood lathe sent from Canada. Before then, Australian police had only ever seized less than 2 tablespoons of the drug ever.
We're very familiar with the fentanyl crisis over there. We are fortunate for the time being that it has not landed here at the same scale.
Last month, CBSA officers were hosted by the Australian Border Force for training exercises in Melbourne. Collaboration, both agencies say, is crucial to stopping the flow of drugs down under. Georgie Smythe, CBC News, Vancouver.
Ottawa is changing mortgage rules to try to encourage people to build more housing units. The government will allow homeowners to refinance insured mortgages to build secondary suites in their homes. Finance Minister Chrystia Freeland says they'll be able to use up to 90% of their home value, amortized over 30 years.
The idea here is to make it easier for people to build a secondary suite in their home, for someone to build a basement flat, a garden flat, laneway housing. This is all about gentle density, creating more homes for Canadians to live in. It builds on the secondary suite loan program, which was announced in the budget.
Freeland said the government is also considering vacant land taxes to encourage building. More than a dozen U.S. states and the District of Columbia have filed lawsuits against social media giant TikTok. The coalition, led by officials in New York and California, allege in their individual suits that the popular short-form video app is harming the mental health of young users. The suits focus partly on the platform's addictive features, including 24/7 notifications and video autoplay. Rob Bonta is California's attorney general.
TikTok has knowingly exploited our young people for profit. It's really that simple. They have an algorithm that's designed to suck our kids in and keep them on as long as possible. And unfortunately, tragically, it's working.
In a statement, a TikTok spokesperson said the company strongly disagrees with the claims, calling them inaccurate and misleading. He is one of Canada's brightest minds at the forefront of artificial intelligence and one of the loudest voices warning of its potential harm to humanity. Now University of Toronto professor Geoffrey Hinton is receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics for his contributions to AI. Jamie Strachan has more on the honour and the work that led to it.
I mean, a cheap hotel that doesn't have an internet that works and only has a poor phone connection.
For Geoffrey Hinton, who has spent his career on the cutting edge of technology, news he had won the Nobel Prize came the old-fashioned way, and he didn't believe it at first.
My cell phone rang, and my first reaction was, how do I tell this isn't a spoof call? But the guy had a strong Swedish accent, and the call was from Sweden. But I had no idea I'd be nominated for it, and I was completely flabbergasted.
Often referred to as the godfather of AI, Hinton has been awarded the 2024 Nobel Prize for Physics. Originally from Britain, he spent much of his career at the University of Toronto. He received the prestigious award for his work that has formed the foundation of generative AI, like ChatGPT. Professor David Haviland, a member of the Nobel Committee for Physics, says Hinton's work is already having an impact in fields like medicine, helping to identify things like tumors more quickly.
You can train an artificial neural network, and then it can become very fast and efficient at finding this in images, and it can work much more quickly, or it assists the doctor and be much more certain in the diagnosis.
Longtime colleague at the University of Toronto, Alain Aspiro-Guzik, says Hinton's legacy is vast.
Some people call him the godfather of AI, and I think it's a very valid term because he actually has trained a lot of the people that are now leaders in the field. And all the work that we have done in AI for robotics and material science has an infusion of Jeff's thinking.
Hinton has been wary about the impact of this potent technology he helped create, marveling at the speed that AI has seeped into everyday life.
10 years ago, if I'd told you what we can do today with AI, you wouldn't have believed me. You'd have said, that's just science fiction. And I think in another 10 years, it's going to be as big a change again.
Until 2023, Hinton was a key member of Google's deep learning artificial intelligence team, but left the company over security concerns around AI and its impact on the job market. He used the platform the Nobel Prize offers to reiterate those concerns today.
Probably within the next 20 years, we're going to develop things more intelligent than us. And we've never been there before. We have no idea what it's going to be like. And we should be working hard now on how to make sure it doesn't take control away from people.
Hinton shared the prize with Princeton University's John Hopfield. The two will split about $1.5 million in prize money. Jamie Strachan, CBC News, Toronto.
Sometimes in this space, we will play some music and say goodbye to an artist whose long career has come to an end. Tonight, sadly, it's a musician whose life and career has ended far too soon.
Go, son, go down to the water and see.
This is the Weeping Song, performed by young singer-songwriter Nell Smith from Fernie, British Columbia. She was known for her collaboration with the American psychedelic rock band The Flaming Lips, an extraordinary relationship that began when Smith started attending Flaming Lips concert with her dad at age 10. She became a regular at their shows and maintained a connection with the band over the years.
And now performing Red Right Hand from their Nick Cave covers album, Where the Viaduct Looms, Nell and the Flaming Lips.
Smith and the Flaming Lips released an album in 2021, and her solo debut was scheduled to come out next year. But yesterday, in a statement on social media, Nell Smith's family announced she died on Saturday night. The Post did not confirm the circumstances of her death, only saying, quote, "Our feisty, talented, unique, beautiful daughter was cruelly taken from us." At a Flaming Lips concert on Sunday, the band announced to the crowd Smith died in a car crash. She was 17 years old. This is a weeping song. Thank you for joining us on Your World Tonight on Tuesday, October 8th. I'm Susan Bonner. Talk to you again.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.